General Sir Michael Rose, formerly one of the top officers in the British Army and commander of the UN force in Bosnia at one of the most difficult stages of the war there, says the Prime Minister should be impeached over Iraq. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good
morning. Is it that say the Prime Minister should be impeached? Is that simply a way of stressing the nature of your criticism of what he did, or do you actually think he should be hauled up before the Lords and accused of high crimes and misdemeanours and so forth?
Well, I certainly think he should be held to account for what he did, because certainly, from a soldier's perspective, there can't be any more serious decision taken by a Prime Minister than declaring war. And then to go to war on what turns out to be false grounds is something that no one should be allowed to walk away from.
But when you say he should be held accountable for what he did, do you attack him for getting the politics wrong, or do you think he did something that was actually illegal?
Well, I think it's somewhere in between the two. Certainly the politics was wrong, that he didn't really declare what his ultimate aims were, as far as we can see. In terms of harping continually on the weapons of mass destruction, when actually he probably had some other strategy in mind. And secondly, the consequences of that war have been quite disastrous, both for the people of Iraq and also for the West, in terms of our wider interest in the war against global terror.
In terms of your first point, he would no doubt point out that Parliament endorsed his decision.
It did, because, of course, he stressed very strongly the weapons of mass destruction argument, which turned out to be wholly false.
But it could have been, well, I'm sure he'd say it was an honest mistake. He has said that.
Well, I think that the intelligence, of course, is something that should always be tested properly. It could be either manufactured by people with another aim in view. It could be spun, it could be late, it could be inaccurate. It has to be properly tested. And there was plenty of opportunity for testing the thesis that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Most notably, of course, the UN weapons inspectors on the ground, who continually asked for more time.
You've also been quite critical of the way some senior officers reacted. I think you believe that perhaps a high-profile resignation or something of that kind was in order at the time.
Well resignation is a very personal matter. It's rather like divorce. It's between you and your conscience and another party. And certainly it's not for some other people to comment on. All I said was that, as far as I was concerned, that I would not have been prepared, if I'd been in that position, to have led the army into a war in which I felt was wrong, and on such weak grounds that it had been outlined.
That would be a huge step for a senior officer to take, to refuse to order troops into action in those circumstances, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it would have been the right step to have taken in, from my perspective, that you cannot put people in harm's way if you don't believe the cause is right or sufficient.
Is there a precedent for any leader of the armed forces doing anything remotely like that in the past?
Yeah, but I'm sure there'll be many leaders of the armed forces, and one can think of some not too long distant where they felt the strategy was wrong and they resigned.
It does cast the whole question of the relationship between the military and the politicians in a very new light, though, doesn't it? If soldiers, sailors and airmen are going to start saying, well, actually, we don't agree with the politics behind this and we're not doing it.
Well, that's surely their job, is to point out the shortfalls and inadequacies, not of the politics, but of the reasoning behind the strategy, and to point out to their political masters that they should not contemplate what is taking the most serious decision that any politician can take, and that is to go into war, without proper grounds and without proper adequate resources to fulfil the strategy that's been outlined.
You, I imagine, stay in touch with your former colleagues in the armed forces. Is it your impression that the sort of views that you're now expressing openly as a retired officer were widely shared at the time, and perhaps even more importantly, are widely shared now among the serving officers?
I don't know how widely they're shared, because, of course, you'd have to do a proper poll.
No, but
I certainly know that for the first time that in my experience there's been a wide debate within the armed forces about the rights and wrongs of this war, and indeed a good deal of criticism as well.
And what about feelings at the moment? Do most officers that you speak to think that we should stay there until what's been started is finished?
Well, I think that's probably the case, but I think most people think that we're going to have to get out at some point, and that our continuing presence is not doing a lot at the moment. But they could see the wider issues involved of walking away from it overnight, and I don't think anyone's suggesting that we should do that.
What do you make of the way that the both the British and the Americans acted in Iraq in the immediate aftermath of the war itself? Because the war itself, of course, was, I think, in many military strategists' views, very successful, at least in a technical sense.
Well, it certainly was, and tremendous credit to both the American and the British forces involved for the way that they toppled Saddam Hussein's army. But the post-conflict phase, obviously, has not been successful. And I think the Prime Minister himself has admitted that he didn't foresee the opposition that would be mounted against what is effectively an occupying power, or indeed put the necessary resources in. I mean, General Zinni, who wrote the original plan for the invasion of Iraq, who was the CENTCOM commander in America, thought it would take 350,000 troops to bring order and stability in that country. Never have we had more than half that number.
Do you think that's about politics? Why do you think that failure, as you see it, has taken place?
Well, I just wonder whether people felt that they had the sufficient political support in this country, or indeed the resources, to go in for what is a very long haul indeed, and with a great deal of expense, both in financial and human life terms. And I think, therefore, people didn't want to spell out at the start what the long-term consequences may be. They went into the war hoping that the Iraqi people would come out and hail them as liberators, which indeed they did for a very short period of time. And then, of course, the inevitable happened.
Sir Michael Rose, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.